Thank you. My name is Joe, and I am a compulsive overeater. I'd like to read something from the literature first. This is from For Today, one of my favorite books in the literature, and it's from December 29th. With the past is past, I have nothing to do, nor with the future is future. I live now and will verify all past history in my own moments. Ralph Waldo Emerson. As I see and feel this moment, all else in my mind is blocked out. I am free of the past and the future. I'm living in the now, aware of sounds and colors, light and shadow. I look outward from myself, and that is freedom. I can notice another, listen with energy. I live life to a moment at a time, leaving the moments lived yesterday and those to be lived tomorrow where they belong. Joy comes from living in the now. For today, I free my mind of yesterday's mistakes and tomorrow's hopes. I live in this moment. I'm going to share some photographs of me at various ages of my life. And the first one is me at age 14. I was very thin, as you can tell, and I had caught some fish, which was unusual for me. I usually didn't catch a damn thing. And anyway, and then this is me also about the same age, maybe a year older. And as you can see, I was a snappy dresser. I liked to dress well, and I had the latest trend of shoes with white tops and black bottoms, if you're old enough to remember that. And this is me about 3 to 4 years later. I went from about 70 or 80 pounds up to about, my top weight was somewhere between 325 and 350. I stayed that weight until college at age 30. And when I graduated for the second time from college, that's me with my dad. And, after I'd been in the program for a while, one of the things that I learned to do was enjoy life. And this is me celebrating my 20th anniversary sober and abstinent. And as you can tell, it's a Mardi Gras costume from Rio de Janeiro. And I was having fun. And that, I think, is an important aspect of abstinence and sobriety. This is Roseanne's house where OA started. In Los Angeles, as you can see, her in the red dress, in the red blouse, walking away from it while I was taking the photograph. So I thought that would be of interest to people who have never seen her house or seen her. I'd like to start my story in February of 1983. I was at probably the lowest that I had ever been in my life. I just wanted to die on a daily basis. I didn't think that I had anything to live for. I was slowly destroying a business that I'd had for 7.5 years. I lived in Houston, the fourth largest city in the United States, and I knew three people after 7.5 years. And I was lonely. I was angry. I was getting fat. I wasn't at my top weight. I was only probably 265 pounds at that time. And I just wanted to die. I was waking up each morning. And I would hear, I would do one of two things. And I was an atheist by this time, which is strange, but I would either say the Lord's Prayer, that time when you're half asleep and half awake, or I would think about getting the gun out of the drawer and shooting myself in the head. There were two people who bought a building with me in February of '83, and I think they knew after a couple of weeks that they needed to get me into a 12-step program because they had three choices. Get me into a 12-step program, drink again, and they had been sober for 6 years, or to sell the building at a great economic loss. And they started to 12-step me into Overeaters Anonymous. They said, oh, across the room, across the hallway from our AA meeting is an OA meeting, and a lot of our friends have lost weight. And, of course, what I thought was if I was thin, my life would be perfect. It never was. I have always lost, I didn't think OA would work for me because I had always lost weight on drugs. The first time when I went from 325 to 350 down, I went on a little black and white pill called black and white Mollies. I don't know if any of you tried them. They were crystal meth. And, I had a doctor friend and he said if one is, he would give me as many as I needed. And, if one is good, three is better. And I lost a lot of weight. And the last diet that I went on was 1977. I went from 271 pounds down to 141 pounds in 9 months. And my diet consisted of a bowl of vegetable soup and a glass of iced tea at lunch. And they would have it waiting for me. I always went to the same restaurant. And then I would have a very heavy dinner of 35 to 50 milligrams of Valium dropped in three or four scotches. And I lost a lot of weight. I do not recommend this diet. It is very bad diet. And when I came in February of 83, I was gaining weight quickly. I just didn't think it would work for me. In May of 1983, again, I was wanting to kill myself on a daily basis. One Saturday, I was driving along to go do something that I didn't want to do once again because I couldn't say that hardest word in the English language, no. And I was driving along a freeway in Houston, and there was a car parked on the freeway. And I hit the car at about 60 to 70 miles per hour. And I said for several years that there were other cars and I couldn't move over. But the reality of it was there was no cars on the highway. And I think that at that moment, when I hit that car, I just wanted to die. And I didn't think there was a solution to the way that I felt. I went to the doctor on Monday morning. I had to see if I had been hurt. And I'd had a physical a month before, and he said, "You needed to lose weight." And he said to me, "You know, Joe, you're okay. The reason you're not hurt is because you're so fat, but you do need to lose weight." And I think that that was the moment that I took the first step, though I had never heard of him before or had seen him. And I said to him, "I've been thinking about going to Overeaters Anonymous." I knew that I was powerless over food and that my life was unmanageable. I went home, I went back to the office, and I told the two people that brought me to my first meeting that I wanted to go to a meeting on Friday night. On Friday night, I went to the meeting. I think, like a lot of newcomers, I sat in the very back of the room. They sat on either side of me, I think, to hold me down in case I wanted to leave. And I heard some things in that meeting that were to change my life. First and foremost, I heard there is a solution to the way that I felt. And that was a miracle to me. They also heard you're only as sick as your secrets. And third, I heard, that you eat three meals a day, not three moderate meals a day, nothing in between, and you don't eat sugar. I went back, I read some literature that day. We only had pamphlets at that time in 1983. And I went back and read a couple of pamphlets, and they had given me a big book, and I didn't read it, but the next morning, I met with the two people that brought me to the program. And I said, "Are you sure this isn't a cult like the Moonies?" Because there seemed to be a lot of chanting and praying in that first meeting. And they said, "No, it's not a cult." And I said, and I was worried I couldn't remember that prayer, that long prayer that they said at the beginning of the meeting, the Serenity Prayer. It seemed so complicated. And I said, "Do I need to go to more than one meeting a week?" And they said, "It's probably a good idea." And that weekend was Memorial Day weekend of 1983. There was a family reunion of mine going on in Houston, and I went to the family reunion, probably not the best place to start your abstinence. And I made the mistake of telling them I was on a diet. And all weekend I heard, "Joe, can we make you something special? We can't make that. Joe can't eat that," et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. On Monday, when I left that meeting, that reunion, I had had three moderate meals with nothing in between and no sugar. And that has been my plan of eating and my abstinence since Memorial Day weekend of 1983. That was when I took the second step, which for the first time, I honestly believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And, I went to the meeting on Friday night. I started going to AA meetings with the two people that brought me when I wasn't going to an OA meeting. And, miracles occurred. I got a sponsor right away. I knew, though, that however, I needed to tell my deepest, darkest secret to the two people that brought me in the program, something that I had never told anybody else before. And we went to lunch one day about a month and a half after I came into the program. And I couldn't tell him. I just was too scared. I just didn't trust. And as we were driving back, we were talking about buying the building, and I happened to say I didn't. I was really hesitant to buy the building. And they said, "Why?" And I said, "Because I'm gay." And Beverly turned to me and said, "We know we still love you." That was when I took the third step. That was when I was willing, no matter what, I was turning my life over to the care of a God. And for the first time in my life, loving Joe just exactly the way he was. And that has been my major journey in life, has been to love Joe exactly as he is. And that has been really, really important to me. I did a fourth and fifth step right away. My first sponsor didn't want me to do it right away, but I did. It took me about 6 months to do because I traveled 3 weeks a month all over the United States. And by the way, until 2020, February of 2020, I ate every meal in a restaurant 99% of the time. You can stay abstinent and eat in a restaurant. In February of 2020, something happened. I don't know, some kind of virus hit the United States. And I was isolated for about 9 months, and I learned how to cook again. And but I gave my first fourth step away in November of 1983. I came across that from with a high, and it was unbelievable. I never felt that way before in my life. And so I did eight, nine, and I went up through the other rest of the steps. What I'd like to talk about a little bit is step six and seven. Step six is for me not doing the things that I want to do. And step seven is doing the things I don't want to do. When I came into the program, I was a social anorexia. I was a social anorexic. I didn't know how to communicate with people, even with my family or with my employees or with my other people. I just knew how to be scared and not let people see who I was. What I had to do was learn how to talk to people. I started going out to dinner with people after the meetings. And, in those days, OA was much larger than it is today. We would have 50 to 60 people at dinner and after an OA meeting on Friday night. And I sat down and I learned how to talk to people, the person across the table from me, the people on either side from me. I also learned how to eat. I watched people who were what they were eating. And so I had to learn how to talk and be intimate with other people. And part of that was that, I gotten rid of my big secret. And so what I could do was start to communicate who I was and how to be intimate with other people. And so, I started to learn how to just talk to people. But more important, I learned how to listen to people. And, I didn't have to be the center of attention. It took me 20 some odd years to learn this completely or more. Today what it is I know how to listen to other people. I know how to communicate with people on an intimate basis. And so what I did was, I have an assistant, a personal assistant, who has been with me for 27 years. We know everything there is to know about each other. And, when she comes in on a Monday morning, we just sit and talk today. I listened to what her weekend was like, or if she was off for a couple, 3 or 4 days, what was your days like? I don't offer advice. She has an addict brother and an Al-Anon mother, and I just listen. And she listens to me, and she takes care of me. We care about each other. We communicate this morning by texting, even though she's at home in San Antonio. I've learned how to do that with people. I've learned how to communicate. For me, the telephone was a, as they say, 50-ton instrument. I didn't like to talk on the phone. I didn't like to listen on the phone. I once had a sponsee say, "You're so amazing. You listen to me for about 3 or 4 minutes, and you ask what's really going on, and then you make a suggestion or two, and then you get off the phone." I didn't want to tell him. I just didn't want to be on the phone with anybody. And I've learned how to talk. I talked today to a woman friend of mine that is going through some problems, and we talked for about 25 minutes. I talked to someone else yesterday for almost an hour. I learned how to communicate with people. For me, the opposite of addiction is communication. And it's communicating with other people to let them know who I am and what's going on with me. I have about 5 minutes left. I notice that some of you are maybe a little bit on the elderly side. I used to think elderly was 65. Now I think it's anyone over 81, which is what I am. And, I have to have a lot of acceptance, and especially in growing old. About four in 2020, I bought a watch that told said, that I had a low heartbeat of 51, 42 minutes of 42 beats a minute, which is very low unless you're a world-class architect athlete. I went to a doctor. He said, "No, it's accurate. I'll send you to another doctor." He sent me to another doctor. He said, "No, it's accurate. I'll send you to another doctor." They put a chip in me, and for 6 months they tested and said, I came back to the doctor and he said, "Yeah, you have low heartbeat." I said, "I know that doctor." And he said, I don't know. We're going to have to put a pacemaker in." I said, "Can we do it tomorrow?" And he said, "No, we have to wait a couple of weeks." And, I put a pacemaker in. It's about acceptance. It's about acceptance of who I am today. And with growing old, and growing old is not for the faint of heart. I had a, there have been several things happening. I'm an artist. I depend on my eyes. An eye doctor told me you have glaucoma. She was hesitant. I said, "Okay, what do we do?" Acceptance. What do I do? What do I do next? In May of this year, I was fine on a Monday night. I went to a meeting, art meeting, and everything was great. Woke up Tuesday morning, no hearing in my left ear. I went to the doctor. He did the treatments and he said, "Oh, Joe, it's just never going to come back." And I said, "That's fine, doctor. I have one good ear and I only half-ass listen to people anyway." So he said, "You have a lot of acceptance." And that's what I have to do today, is have acceptance of what is going on in my life. I was talking to my doctor at a physical about 6 weeks ago, and I said, "Doctor, I don't know what's happening. I can't go like I used to go at 25." I said, "I can only, work for about 12 hours a day for 2 days, and then it takes me a couple of days to work it." He said, "Joe, most people don't work for 12 hours a day." So what I have to do is learn how to have acceptance, learn what to do next, and then take care of myself no matter what the situation is. It's very important today that I take care of Joe. And that's what I try to emphasize to other people, is taking care of yourself first, because I can't help anybody if I don't take care of myself. There's a in doctor, addict, alcoholic, whatever they call it now, everybody talks about the acceptance, but my favorite part is, and I'm going to maybe paraphrase it, is if I focus on having a good day, I have a good day. If I focus on having a bad day, I have a bad day. If I focus on the problem increases. If I focus on the answer increases. Today, I want to focus on having a good day, and I want to focus on the solutions. I also like to end this. In AA, they say, even if your ass is falling off, don't drink. I like to say, even if your ass is falling off, don't overeat. And if you don't overeat, more than likely your ass will fall off. Thank you very much.